This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, friends. It's Michael Cruz Kane with another episode of A Good Cry. Thank you for listening, for sharing, for reviewing, for rating, etc. I love it. And also an extra special thank you to people this week who DM'd and emailed me at agoodcry@theradiopoint.com with the answer to the question we asked in the last episode, which was, where do you go to cry? What is your crying spot? I'll give you a few of the answers that we got to that question, starting with the earliest responses, and then maybe on subsequent episodes, I'll go ahead and answer with some more. I've got a listener named Ryan, who says that he likes to go out for late night walks to cry. He'll do a late night cry just walking around town. And sometimes people look at him like he's nuts. And I got to tell you, so what? They're going to do that. People are not used to seeing people cry in the open, but they should be. Crying is a natural and normal thing. Ryan, I respect your late night cries. Then we got a listener named Andrew who gave us two places that he likes to cry, and we love a bonus place to cry. One, Andrew said, was at the gym on the elliptical while watching movies. He gave me two movies that elicited the most crying from him, and those movies were Arrival and Interstellar. Now, part of that I can relate to because those are movies that make me cry. The other part of it is a little tough for me because I have never in my life been on an elliptical long enough to watch a whole movie. If you can stay on an elliptical for the duration of a movie, you and I are different species. We're not genetically related to each other in any way. It's like, you might as well be an ape and I'm like a comb. That's how far away we are from each other. In addition to the elliptical, Andrew also says that he'll cry late at night in front of the desktop by himself watching YouTube videos, and that one I find totally relatable. Everybody's asleep, got the computer open, and now I'm watching the 500th video in a row of military families being reunited. Do you guys watch these ever? Absolutely destroy me. I mean, come on. Okay, one more, which is from your friend and mine, the editor of this very podcast, Bree Matan, who says that she has a special crying bench in Central Park and, quote, God help the bitch that is sitting in that spot when she's on the corner of 59th and 5th and needs a good cry, end quote. I love it. I love claiming your spot. Look, I know you are hanging out and feeding the pigeons, but I need you to scoot because I've got something I got to cry about. That's something I can relate to. Get off my bench. I got to cry. Those are the grief thoughts for the day, but I have an amazing episode coming up for you with actress, comedian, podcaster Greta Titelman, who is delightful, nice, smart, funny, all of the good things, and who lost her mom many years ago. And we talk about how she's dealt with that, and also this idea of seeking, of, you know, going to psychics or crystals or whatever it is you use to try and find the person that you have lost. And that's why sometimes I think the euphemism of having lost someone as opposed to them having died is effective, because many of us do continue to seek that person even if they aren't anywhere. Does that make sense? Maybe even we seek them at these places where we go to cry. Maybe those people are there on our bench in Central Park or at the elliptical. I don't mean like literally there. I mean that those places give to us some memory of them. I don't know, something worth thinking about. I love this talk with Greta. I hope you enjoy it too. This is A Good Cry. I hope it helps. Greta, thank you for doing this. We kick off A Good Cry with a vaguely amorphous question. Vaguely amorphous? Is that the same thing? Maybe just amorphous.
Okay.
Question. That is, would you tell us about your relationship with the grief?
Yes.
All right.
Are you looking for a yes or no answer?
It's not really a yes or no. It's meant to be more of an open-ender.
Well, yes. Yeah. I mean, isn't that why we're talking?
That is. What if it was just a big surprise, though? Wouldn't they? What if you were like, no?
Yeah. You know, I do this really bad thing where I come into a lot of podcasts cold because mm-hmm. I find it to be more fun when you like genuinely have no idea what to expect. So if you told me that this was actually just a ploy to not talk about grief and to talk about interior design, I would say, okay, sure. Weirder things have happened.
We could. The home that you're in, which the listeners can't see.
No.
Because that's how podcasting works.
Yes.
It's a beautiful home.
It's a beautiful home. And you know what? The thing about grief is it teaches us to be flexible mm-hmm. all the time.
Holy shit.
So you need to be able to kind of go with the flow at any given turn. So it's like if you didn't want to talk about grief, the thing that grief has taught me is I need to be okay with you not wanting to talk about grief.
Wow. I did not see the lesson coming out of that. That's varsity grieving right there.
Yes. Varsity grief. You know, it's fitting that we're talking during this time of year. I don't know when this is going to come out, but this is a very grief-filled time of year, I think, for a lot of us.
Yeah. I think the holidays can be especially brutal. Is that what you're alluding to?
Sure. Surely that.
Surely. Surely that.
Yes.
So who is it that we'll be talking about on the podcast today, Greta, may I ask?
My mother.
Okay. And how long ago did your mother die?
In March, it will be 10 years.
Oh, wow. So we're coming up on a significant anniversary.
Yeah, but like, isn't every anniversary significant in some way?
I think so. I think that they all are. I mean, even like every day can carry its own significance. But doesn't 10 years feel like something? It feels like regular? Like, do you think 9 and 10 are going to feel the same?
No, because I'm dramatic. So I will surely make sure that, I don't know why I'm saying surely so much today. I will make sure that 10 feels different than 9.
Do you do something to mark the anniversaries?
I do.
What do you do?
You know, we have a silly tradition. On my mom's birthday, my sister and my aunt, my mom's sister, we all buy ourselves a pair of shoes because my mom loves shoes. So that's what we do on her birthday.
I love that.
And her birthday is exactly 6 months to the day. Her birthday is October 19th. The day she died is March 19th. And my birthday is April 19th.
Oh, wow.
So I guess she's 5 months to the day. I'm 6 months to the day, her birthday. Anyway, so then on her day that she dies, my sister and I like to do something indulgent, which usually involves like whatever we decide our mood is that our mom would quote unquote want us to do. Granted, she probably wouldn't want us to do like any of the shit that we're doing, but like we kind of write it off as like, well, mom would want us to do
sure.
So it's kind of a day where we just get to do whatever it is we want to do under the guise that mom is blessing us in doing whatever it is that we want to do. And it always involves, you know, a vodka or a white wine or like shopping, which makes my mom just sounds like a alcoholic and shopping addict, which she was both of those things. But, you know, that's kind of just how we like to celebrate her spirit.
I got it. So, yeah, you're... So, yeah, we're taking shots and we're buying shoes. And this one's for you, mom.
We're consuming. We're not meditative. You know, we're absolutely looking out into the world.
Yeah, it's outside of us.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's that's something we always advocate for in this podcast, making sure that you process things externally.
Yes.
Only. That's it.
Because no good work comes from sitting with yourself.
No one has ever, introspection has never helped a single person. That's the motto of this. That's part of, I don't know if you've heard the theme song, but that's what they sing.
Yes, and I read the tweets. I read your tweets, you know, and some could say, should you have tweeted it? You know, it's, some could argue.
That case has been made. The world would be worse because of it.
Well, when I'm not being a sarcastic bitch, I'm sure that people have probably said absolutely insane things because Twitter is a hellscape.
Really, honestly, that is the only time I've ever tweeted something and every response to it has been nice. So just in case you're listening to this, you know what Greta's talking about. I tweeted about my son dying on the 10-year anniversary of his death. And it was like a viral thing and whatever. And like thousands of people responded to it. And all of the responses were nice. The only thing that was not nice in those tweets was that Monica Lewinsky responded to the tweets by saying, sorry for your loss. And in one of the tweets, I was like, all anybody ever says is sorry for your loss, which I didn't mean as like, it's not bad. It's just, that's what people say.
Right.
And people started like feasting on Monica Lewinsky and being like, how dare you? That's not what he wants. And I'm like, oh God, she's been through enough.
Yeah. I do like people doubling down on Monica though, for you and your defense. You terrorized Monica Lewinsky. And not many people get to say that.
That's true. It's a very select few who really got to give Monica the worst, but I was there for a second go-around on Monica.
You were.
May I ask you, mm-hmm. is it okay if I ask you questions on this podcast? Does that feel?
No. I personally came on this to just sort of monologue.
Yeah, you have some stuff you want to talk about.
Yeah, I do. I want to clear the air.
Your mother died almost 10 years ago, you're saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
And from what did she die, may I ask?
She had lung cancer.
And is that something that, did you know for a long time before she died that she was going to die? Or was it the kind of thing where you discovered it and she died quickly?
We discovered it and she died quickly. When we got confirmation, when we got a confirmed diagnosis, she died 3 months after that. However, my mom, starting in like the fall of 2011,
Okay. My
mom was, my parents were going through a divorce, and my mom started getting very mysteriously sick, like coughing all of the time, not sleeping, just not well. And, you know, as humans, we like to write off a lot of things to stress. And you're going through a stressful time, you're going through a hardship, whatever it is. And I think that we want to be, it's in our nature to want to be resilient. And it's especially in our nature to want to be resilient in front of our children and the people we love so that they don't think that we're like weak. So I think a lot of what my mom was doing was actually just like feeling like complete shit, but already feeling so weak in this other aspect of her life that she didn't want to acknowledge kind of head on what was actually happening with her health-wise. I think she had a lot of misdiagnoses. Yeah, diagnoses. Where a lot of people said it was whooping cough and like bad acid reflux and all of this shit. And then finally, like a sweet nurse at a hospital in Scranton, Pennsylvania was like, hey, I want to scan your chest. And then when she gave my mom a chest scan, at this point, months of my mom being so sick, like being so sick and like gray, like truly looking like death. That's when my mom got the chest scan. They found the tumor. And then shortly thereafter, she got diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. But I had a trip. I was living in New York at the time, and I went out to LA to visit some of my friends. And I was with one of my friends at her house, and she was asking me how I was doing because she knew my parents were divorcing and all this stuff, and it was stressful. And I told her, I was like, I think my mom is going to die. And I think there was something inside of me, and this was before my mom got diagnosed with cancer, but I just knew that like something in her was not going to be able to continue on.
Sorry, that was before the diagnosis?
Yes.
Like you just looking at your mom, you're like, something's going on here?
Yes, because I knew at this point it had been months of her just being so sick and us just not getting to the bottom of it. And I just had this feeling in my body that like we were approaching the end of her life on this earth.
Wow. I mean, you have a sister?
Yes.
Who is older or younger than you?
Older than me.
So you're going through your mother becoming super ill?
Yes.
At the same time, pretty much concurrent with your parents getting a divorce?
Yes.
So that's like, especially when you're a kid, for your parents to get a divorce. Well, I guess almost, you know, any age, but.
Yeah, I mean, I was 21 when all this was happening on the brink of turning 22, I think there was something really annoying to me being that age, watching my parents divorce.
You mean you were annoyed or you were annoying?
Honey, I was never annoying. I'm kidding. I'm literally, the listeners are like, she's annoying right now.
Never.
No, I think that there was something that I found annoying about my parents getting divorced then.
Sure.
I remember just being like, you couldn't have fucking done this when I was 9. Like, I wanted you to. Like, you couldn't have done this when I was a kid, when I could have had 2 rooms, 2 batches of shit, 2 times to get gifts, like all the selfish things you think when you're a kid. Yeah, and I just remember being 21 and being really pissed off and being like, I understand how relationships work. I'm old. Like, I know what this is. And I just kind of, the whole thing happened so fast. It really, like, from when my parents told us they were divorcing to when my mom died, it was 9 months. So it was just like trauma compressed on top of trauma. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing that made me think of, like, how do you feel like those two things, because each of those things separately, right, would be a lot for a person of any age to deal with. How do you feel like, and maybe you don't have a perspective outside of this, I guess, but how do you feel like those two things happening concurrently might have been different from if they had happened? Like, if your parents got divorced when you were 9, like you said, do you think that would have changed the way you perceived the loss of your mother? Like, you think that those things it would have been easier? Not that it's easy, you know what I mean? Or I don't mean that, but...
No. I definitely, definitely think it would have changed everything. It would have changed everything. I think that when someone you love dies, you know, I am not a believer that everything happens for a reason. I don't believe in that shit at all. And I don't like it when people say that to me, because I think a lot of people go through things that shouldn't have happened. And I think that is it an idiom? I don't know. I think that saying is just annoying, because when I think about what happened and when it happened, I spent so much time wishing that they didn't happen at the same time.
Sure.
There's a part of me that wishes that my mom could have been alive long enough to have fallen in love again. There's a part of me that wishes my parents could have been divorced and my mom could have been alive, and that maybe they could have reconciled a bit more in their relationship so that my sister and I didn't have so many complicated feelings to weed through that was all just sort of this hodgepodge muck of us projecting how we felt onto our mom and how we thought she felt onto our dad and all this shit. You know, I think that there would have been more clarity there. I also think that when someone dies, this goes back to what I was saying about when people say everything happens for a reason. I think that when we lose people, we're constantly searching for reasons for why this happened. And I think that I was in so much pain it was very easy for me to blame it on my dad and for me to blame it on them divorcing. And, like, that's not fair, because that's not real, you know? And that was painful. Like, that's a really heavy load for, like, little me to put on my father, who definitely... Now I can say, like, for sure did not deserve that, you know?
I mean, what did it take for you to change your point of view on that? Because that seems like something, I'm sure plenty of people retain blame for divorce for one or both of their parents. And then to have your mother die on top of it, it feels like, well, I'm not going to blame her anymore, for sure.
Right.
Like, was it therapy or was it just like getting older? What allowed you to feel for your dad on that side of it?
It was a combination. I mean, therapy. Like, I would literally be not here if it weren't for therapy. Therapy, number one.
Yes, we endorse therapy.
Yes. extensive therapy.
Get like 5 to 10 therapists, I always say.
Yeah. Moments where I feel like I'm over therapy and then fall down back on the ground and I'm like, wow, I need to be handcuffed to therapy for the rest of my life. And I think I just got tired. You know, like being angry is so, so, so exhausting.
Yeah.
And it makes you look bad. And I want to look gorgeous forever. So when I was really feeling like, you know, when you look in the mirror and you're just, especially with grief, like, and some days I still feel like I look like this in the mirror. When you look in the mirror and you're like, wow, I look sad. And I look exhausted from feeling these feelings of sadness and anger. I got to a point, at least with my dad, where I was like, okay, well, this man is still here and alive. And I don't need to be torturing myself every day with these feelings of anger and sadness toward him. I can really be proactive and like try and work on this shit for myself because I don't want to feel this way anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm not perfect. You know, there are some days where I still feel like little blips of that anger like percolate inside of me. But I then go back to like all the therapy where I'm just like, no, Greta, that is not how you want to feel. You need to like take a deep breath, step back from the situation, like whatever. So, and also boundaries, like having boundaries with things, like realizing for me, if my dad calls me on the phone and I know I'm not in the right headspace to like have a conversation with him, it's okay for me to be like, I can't talk right now. And then wait a beat until I know that I'm like ready to be like, hello, father. I am your calm daughter. How are you? You know?
Yeah, wait a beat or like a week or a month or whatever it is that you're like feel readjusted to that.
Well, you know, I have like death paranoia. So of course, like when he calls me and then I do this fucked up thing where I'm like, and that could be the last time he ever calls you. Like, you know, and it's—
Sure.
So I try and just be like, you don't want the last time you talk to him to be you being like, and fuck you, and fuck the fact that you did this, you motherfucker. Like, no, I don't want that. So
yeah, I think it took for me, and it seems like you are more emotionally intelligent about this than I am, was, probably will be. But that idea also of like, he's just a person, like he's trying.
Yeah.
He's doing his whatever choices he made in his life. I didn't really realize that until I had kids of my own that suddenly I was like, you know, dads and moms are really trying. I didn't really think about that until I was one.
Right.
You know what I mean? Before that, I was like, these people have it so easy with what they messed everything up.
Yeah.
You're like, oh no, people are always doing that.
Well, I mean, I think that, not to make the podcast about you, because I know that it should really be about me, but—
Yes, please.
I mean, I think that that's in many ways like why you— I mean, you never get over the loss of anyone, but like truly the loss of a child, it's how do you move on? I don't know. I don't think you ever move on. I think you just like figure out your life and it takes shape in this other way and there are beauty in other things. But I think that with the loss of a parent, like, I don't know, there's something more, they imprint themselves more on you. And like,
sure.
It must be such a fucking head game when you lose a kid where you're like, but wait, I didn't have time. To like,
yeah, the grief is like inverted, I think, in a way where like,
yeah,
I don't want to speak for you, but I would imagine a lot of like the loss of a parent is here are all these memories that I have with this person, like all we did this. With me, it's all the memories that I don't have.
Correct. It's a deficit.
Yeah, we never had this. You never asked me this question about, you know, girls or whatever like that. You and I won't have those conversations.
Yeah, like how I get to go and buy a stupid pair of shoes on my mom's birthday.
Right.
Like, you never—
I can still do that. I can still buy stupid shoes.
Well, you should. Your son would want you to have shoes.
He would want me to have Louboutins. That would be important to him.
He would. I think so. Again, you can project whatever you want.
That's true. Wait, I wanted to talk about, there's a reason for everything, or how did you put it, the phrase that you hate? Everything has a reason.
Oh, when everyone's like, when people say everything happens for a reason.
Everything happens for a reason. And you were, to paraphrase, you're like, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Does that tie into like your sense of, if there is such a thing, spirituality or whatever? Are you like, It's not, based on that, I'm going to assume you're not like a devout Christian. But do you have some sense in the of, well, does any of that resonate for you? Anything?
Yeah, like, look, like, I'm not a nihilist. You know what I mean? I would be lying if I were to tell you that I haven't talked to like 900 clairvoyants and like, you know, cleansed crystals in the moonlight and like gone to mass and church and gone to synagogue. Like my, you know, if I haven't done, my dad's Jewish, my mom was Catholic. If I haven't done like a myriad of seeking, I would be lying. I also personally think it's not fun to not believe in anything. Like, how sad to think that this is all that there is, like, in this material life. Like, I definitely get, like, woo-woo spiritual. However, I think that the notion that, like, I'm a control freak.
Okay.
So therefore, when people say everything happens for a reason, it makes me feel like there's too much shit outside, out of my control. And of course, there is so much shit out of my control. But if there's one like little thing that I can put into my head to be like, everything happens for a reason, it's like, okay, so you buy a coffee in the morning, you trip, you fall, you get hit by a car. Oh God, I guess you shouldn't have bought that coffee. You know what I mean? It's like,
right. It
plays like weird mind games. And I would like to think that maybe we have a little bit more control than the everything happens for a reason sort of like saying gives us. I think that I understand, like, to me, it falls in the same category as like, the universe has a plan. Like, you know, no, I don't think that's true. Like, I think we all get to make decisions, and I think the decisions we make inform the results we receive. I think tragedy happens to all of us that is completely out of our control, but I don't think that the universe had that in store for us. Do you know what I mean? I don't believe in, like, God testing me. I don't believe in God giving you only what you can handle frankly, I think I got way too much. I actually couldn't handle all of that shit.
Yeah.
So I don't think that that's true, and I don't think that those things don't bring me peace. I don't feel peace when someone is like, the universe, you're on the universe path, like— Like, let go and submit. For me, I'm the stubborn little, like, Aries. Here I am talking about astrology. Obviously, I, like, have my own issues. But it's like, you know, it's like I'm too stubborn to just be like, okay, sure, everything happens for a reason. Like, I can list you a million things that happened that shouldn't have happened, you know? So it's, I don't know. I just don't like that. And I think that that's like a lazy thing to say to someone that is dealing with tremendous amount of grief and pain.
Yeah, it's just, it's feels like an easy thing to say. It feels like a compliment when you say stuff like, you know, God only gives you what you can handle and you must be able to handle a lot. And it's like, well, can you actually, if you wouldn't mind telling God, like, I don't need to handle all this. So you can handle it. You can pass this off.
Yeah. I mean, also, hold on. There are scenarios of which everything happens for a reason. Like, if I were running late and I got to the subway and you happened to be standing there and I'd be like, hey, it's so nice to see you. I didn't, like, who knows? Then I'd be like, okay, you know what? Maybe I was late for a reason. Maybe I was supposed to run into you. Instances like that, I'm like, sure, the universe being cute, but like terrible, awful things happening for any reason.
Right. When like a hurricane swallows a cruise ship, you're not...
Yeah, like, no, that's not what that saying is for.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
You talked, though, about maybe I couldn't tell if you were joking, but about like crystals and clairvoyance, mm-hmm. And seeking. You talked about seeking.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that help you cope? Like, does it feel good to do those things?
Yes and no. I think that in the beginning, when my mom died, I was so confused and lost and alone. And I think that I really felt like I had to be very, very, very outwardly strong. I mean, when my mom died, I did 5 years of college. Thank you very much to everyone who has done 5 years of college. I was like finally in my... No, I wasn't. I was in my fourth year. Whoops, was supposed to be in my fifth year. But I was still in school. And when my mom died, everyone was like, take time, like, do your thing. And I immediately went back to school. Like, my mom's funeral happened on, a Sunday. I was back in class on a Monday. I was back working my job. I was, like, just fully back in my life because I just couldn't deal. And I think that that is a pretty normal thing for some people.
Yeah, we've had a lot of people on the podcast say that, you know, after whatever the thing is that happened to them, that they were like, and I went back to what I was doing the day before it happened the next day.
Yeah, and like I would have people that would be like, didn't your mom just die? And I would be like, uh-huh, yeah, she did. The funeral was amazing, you know? It's like psychotic.
What kind of job were you working at the time?
I worked in retail.
Sure,
yes.
Sure.
And then I worked for a photographer. I went to Parsons in New York. So okay. I was just like, you know, whatever, being emotional in an art school. But I think that I felt that I didn't really know where to turn and I didn't really have that many friends that had gone through the loss of parents yet. Now I have quite a few more. I know right. Alyssa Lynn Paris did your show and she's a very wonderful friend of mine. And
the best.
Anyway, I digress. The point is, I was like, I need something to believe in. So I started talking to clairvoyance. And I got referred to this one woman who, you know, is in Arizona and I could talk to her over the phone and it was like an absurd amount of money, but she was supposed to be amazing. And I was like, fuck it, I'm talking to her. And our first conversation, she like opens up the phone call and she's like, I'm so sorry, I don't usually do this, but like your mom is coming to me so strongly and she wants me to tell you that her chest doesn't hurt anymore, but your father is still an asshole. And I was like, immediately I started sobbing because I'm like, this woman knows nothing about me. You know, at the time, like there weren't podcasts, whatever there were, but I wasn't on them talking right. about it. And it's not like my mom's obituary was like, she died of lung cancer. You know what I mean? So that was really crazy. And then we just would talk and she would just say like really specific things that made me feel like, holy shit, maybe my mom is somewhere in the... another dimension, like channeling herself to this woman and saying these like eerily specific things to her. So that was, I definitely went on like a kick of talking to people. And I think at the time it did make me feel good, but I think it also made me feel confused, you know, because you can't really take anything that anyone says as Bible, like, you know, I'm not that I believe in the Bible, but as the Kardashians say, Bible, but you can't believe in it. So I found myself kind of letting it fuck with my head a little because I was like, well, this woman who's channeling my dead mom is saying that she would say this about my life. And it's like, no, Greta, this woman is just like, you know, probably projecting herself onto you too. Who the fuck knows?
Right.
So then I just had to take from it what I will. So I like had to put a hard pause on talking to the clairvoyance and a hard pause on like going to a bunch of astrologers. And that's when I was like, you know what you should really be spending your money on? Therapy. And you know what you should really do is get on Lexapro and see if like that helps you rather than buying rose quartz and like a Dalmatian stone. And
I've never heard of a Dalmatian stone. I don't even know what that means.
Honey, there are a lot of things out there. So then like once I started doing a bunch of therapy for years and years and years, like now I still talk to clairvoyants and I still talk to astrologers. I just do it in a way that definitely has a placebo effect in my life, where they really only say positive things, but like I do it to basically just feel like I have an anonymous cheerleader telling me the things that I want to hear in my life. And whether or not it's true, it doesn't matter, because it's serving the purpose of making me believe that it will happen. You know what I mean? And if you believe it, that's half of it.
Yes. I think an analog for me in that would be like going to acupuncture, where it's like, I don't know if this is anything.
Sure.
But I definitely feel better when I walk out.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter.
Every time I leave, I feel better. So yeah, exactly. If I feel better, then it worked.
Yeah.
I remember after our son died that my wife, we would go to she would watch, I forget the guy's name. He used to have a show like Crossing Over or something.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say his name was John Edwards, but I know that's also a guy who ran for president. So maybe it's the wrong person.
Well, you're not thinking about the Hollywood psychic, that kid.
Not that kid, but I mean, very much like that kid. And yeah, this would hold true for that kid as well. But my wife, who I don't think would have been necessarily interested in that genre of human being, started to become interested in it and mm-hmm. watch these things that I skeptically was like, this is all horseshit. Like that's
right.
Which is probably not helpful to hear. And I've tried to couch it in because it feels manipulative to me. Mm-hmm. But I also remember for her, the desire to communicate with our son or to just to know that he was someplace and okay, extended to the point where she bought us tickets to go see a magic show. And this dude at the end would do something where for everybody in the room, he would be like, you know, I know that you X, you know, some factoid about every person in the room. Mm-hmm. And he was not proclaiming himself to be a psychic. It was he admittedly a magic trick. But I remember leaving that and her being like, I wonder if he could talk to Fisher somehow, and trying to be like, that's no, there's, I mean, I really don't think so. But the further I get away from it, chronologically, the more that I'm like, I don't fucking know. Maybe.
No, that's the thing is, you don't know. The fact that that fucking psychic said that shit to me about my mom and, then went into even further detail about, our life. Just too much.
Yeah.
I do believe that, our spirits don't die. I do think that, me, fully reverting back on now, I'm like, maybe I do believe that everything happens for a reason. But I do think that, weird things happen, right? And I think that, why did she know those details? I don't know. Am I going to believe that she can channel my dead mom's spirit? Maybe. Does that make me feel like the bird that flies into my shower window when I'm showering is also my mom? Yeah, it kind of does. Does it make me feel that when I'm in the car and a very specific Led Zeppelin song comes on the radio is my mom? It does. You know, so I'm kind of this is making me feel warm or close. So I'm enjoying that. But what I don't like is what you're saying, when it starts to teeter on feeling manipulative, when it starts to feel too much like this person is giving me advice on how to live my life, when really the only reason why I want to talk to them is because I want to talk to my mom, you know?
Yeah. I don't know what it is about me that almost doesn't want to believe it. I don't want.
Because it's scary. Because to believe in that shit is scary.
Yeah, maybe.
Because how terrifying would it be to communicate with your son? That would be scary.
Yeah.
Because it's so loaded. It's so, so loaded. You know, if I could really be presented with the opportunity of resurrecting my mother and speaking with her, just thinking about it, I could literally just cry thinking about it, because it's that would be so overwhelming for me, because all that we do is work on living our life without them. So then to have them be back with us in some way, whether it's talking through a clairvoyant or something, is scary.
Yeah, I think for me, when you put it that way, it's also the idea that, you know, if he, I don't believe this, I don't think, although I acknowledge the possibility, but if he was watching over me, the idea that talking to him at one point, that I would be like, so wait, were you watching like when I went to Dunkin' Donuts and I had four donuts and sat there by myself, you saw that?
Yeah.
And I mean, just that part of it is humiliating. The which sort of ties into this other theme, I think, that I've talked with about other people on the podcast, where you do feel like, or at least I feel like, it opens my eyes to things. I'm definitely changed by grief, but it hasn't made me, you know, better necessarily. It has maybe like made me broader. I have like a more, I'm open to more emotional experiences from other people. But yeah, the idea of my son, like after he died, being like, I'm the rest of my life will be a testament to this person. That's a thought that passes through my mind. And then, you know, the next day, a school bus takes too long for the kids to get on the bus, and you're behind them in your car being like, fucking go. And you're like, this is not, this is not an honor for my child.
Yeah.
He wouldn't look down and be like, that's my dad.
Yeah, I know. Like, good job, you know? Yeah, it's all so weird. I don't think grief made me a better person. I think it made me a more empathetic person.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I've always been a very empathetic person. Like, I was I would cry at, you know, and little baby animal videos and shit like that, if that has anything to do with anything, I don't know. But I think that for me, like, all that grief has done, it's like whatever emotional depth existed in me before is now a black hole.
Meaning that it's like bottomless.
It's bottomless.
Yeah.
I could be so, it's bottomless, but it's fickle. Kind of like what you're saying about, like, I'm going to live every day for my son, and then the next day immediately being like, fuck these kids on the bus. Like, fuck this. Like, my emotional little pit can be so sappy and like, oh my God, and life is so beautiful and amazing and like, oh. But then it can instantly flip and be like, yeah, whatever, we're all gonna fucking die anyway, it doesn't matter, you know? So it can I can open the black hole or I can immediately shut it.
Are there things you feel like you have learned from grief? We talked about this at the very top. We made a couple of jokes about being, what was the word we used? You used it. It was not versatile. It was like adaptable or something.
Yeah.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. Are there things you feel like you have learned from grief?
Oh my God. Yeah. Where to begin? I think I've learned that, I've said this already in the, you know, 37 minutes we've been talking. I've said this a million times. It's never ending. I think the idea that you somehow stop grieving is not true.
Can I talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
How has it changed?
How has my grief changed?
Yeah, like, I mean, I would imagine it's less acute, right, as the years go on?
For sure, it's less acute as the years go on. But, you know, like, you want this person to be able to experience your life with you. So I think that it's definitely, rather than being a sharp noise, it's definitely a dull noise that exists like ambiently in the background. But as we go through life, you know, like the big things, like I got married last year, and the way that I felt the whole time was so griefful. Like I was just grieving this idea of the day that I thought I would have with my mom. And I was never even the kind of person that was like, when I get married, it's going to be like this. Like, I never even talked about that shit with my mom. But it was all that I could think about. It was, like, eating me alive. And it's like, I wish my mom could fucking watch me on TV. Like, whenever I have a minutia of success, I just wish that she could see that, like, I really did it, you know? And I think that grief like that, like, comes more in waves for me now. Like, I have more of these, like, it's in the background, and then a big wave of grief will wash over me when it's, like, I find myself yearning for her. I also find myself now in my 30s, like, yearning for her in a completely different way than I was in my 20s. And I can only imagine that as I continue to get older, when I'm in my 40s and 50s and 60s, it'll be ever evolving. So I think—
What do you mean by that? How is that yearning different?
I think that what I need, what I would need from my mom is just completely different than what I needed from her when I was in my 20s, you know.
I see.
I think that now, like, I'm, like, really an adult. And I think that I have, she was my, like, guiding force. And she was really the person who believed in me so much. And I think that what I'm dealing with right now in my life is, like, okay, you know, I have all of these boxes of things that I thought I was supposed to hit. I have a wonderful husband. I have a beautiful life. I have a career that, you know, is moving along. Of course, we all want more and more and more, but we need to be—
Sure, sure. Never enough, never enough, never enough.
We need to be grateful for how it's moving. But I'm finding that right now in my 30s, I'm having a really hard time, like, just me personally believing in myself alone. Whereas, like, my mom was always that person for me. And I think that my 20s were filled with so many distractions of, like, figuring myself out. And now it's like, okay, I know who I am now, but, like, can I fully believe in myself alone without this person who was, like, the backbone of me feeling confident in believing in myself?
Yeah.
So I think that, like, that's kind of what I'm presented with right now in my 30s of sort of being like, okay, you built the foundation of the house. Now can you, like, fill the interior of the house with, like, all the stuff you know you can do, and you do it on your own, you know? Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense to me. But maybe this is a question you may not have an answer to, but how do you think you will get that? That sense of belief that you feel like your mother can, and a mother, right? People listening to this too probably have that same sense. Like, that's a role that a lot of mothers play for people.
Mm-hmm.
That they imbue you with a sense of belief in yourself. Like, they believe in you for you.
Yeah.
How can you get that now that she's gone? I mean, surely there's a way,
yeah.
Right? I mean, do you think about how, because your career, you know, is growing and, you know, people will be writing about you and whatever. Do you think that those things will at some point, like, will that external validation help, or is it something else?
I think that this is literally what I spend an hour a week talking to my therapist about. I think that the external validation will, of course, help, because naturally you're like, okay, well, if other people see it, then it has to be true, you know?
Right.
But no, I think that it ultimately doesn't help in the long run. I think that, you know, something my therapist and I talk about all the time is, like, if you don't have the world applauding you constantly, and if everything, you know, so much of all of our identities is rooted in work. So it's like, if all of that just gets taken away and you're just left with yourself and your little life, like, is that enough? And I think that that's the work of, like, that's the ever-evolving work of just being human.
Being alive, sure.
And I think that, you know, whether or not you've lost, like, your parent or a friend or a child or whatever it is, I think that these people that are so impactful in our community that, like, enrich us, like, they literally fertilize the soil of our roots. So when they're gone, it's like, how do we replenish that? And it's all just fucking exhausting internal work that, like, I wish I could wake up every morning and be like, you are awesome, Greta. You're fucking amazing. Like, every dream is going to come true. You deserve everything. You're an awesome person. Go for it. But, like, I don't wake up like that. You know,
right.
Some mornings I do, but most mornings I wake up and I'm like, here we are again, old friend.
Yeah, I think that's got to ring true for a lot of people, that, like, some mornings you wake up, you look in the mirror, and your therapist doesn't even have to tell you, because you're like, man, I love you.
Yeah.
I love you, and you're beautiful inside and out. And other mornings,
yeah,
you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, you are a lying piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't deserve everything you have. You don't deserve.
You're like, I'm letting everyone down. No one actually wants to be my friend. Everyone hates me. I should quit. That's what they all want you to do. They all want you to quit. Just quit.
Yeah, every compliment they've paid is secretly just jealousy and anger.
Yeah. Yeah, and you don't have that mom to call to be like, I feel like everyone wants me to quit. And they're, you know, and then they're the ones that'll be like, no, you're crazy.
Yeah, and parental love is also so different from every other kind of love. It's like, because everything else is based on some experience of you as a person, your friends and your husband. Like they, and I mean, you know, not true for all parents, I'm sure, but like, I love my kids in a way that's totally inexplicable. Like it far surpasses their value to the universe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So there is, I don't know. I don't know what the point of that was.
I mean, I just like my mom was such a tough love person. That was her way. Like she would be like, stop talking to me about it and just do it. Like that was her whole thing. Like just like so action oriented, focused, like really intense human being. And she could be so tough with me and like I could really take it. But if anybody else tries to be tough with me, I'm like, no, no, you don't get to talk to me that way. Like, no, no, no. So I do think that it is like kind of the underlying language of parental love where you're like, well, I know this person loves me more than the whole entire universe combined. So when they say to me, like, shut up and do it, they're not saying that to me because they think I'm an idiot. They're saying that to me because they really love me and believe that I can do it, you know?
Yeah, that's a kindness.
Yeah.
And and it's impossible to interpret things like that way. Maybe not impossible, but unlikely from other people.
Yeah.
We talked about this a little bit already, but do you think of your mother as being someplace now? Like, I assume not like heaven, but I mean like...
Yeah.
Watching over you in some way?
Well, I think like you, I would like to think that my mom isn't seeing me do some of the dumb shit that I do, you know?
Right.
Like, I think sometimes, am I being too sincere? I mean, I'm sarcastic and I'm also sincere. I want the listeners to know that I'm being sincere in the like latter chunk of this.
Yes, we will. You are being the appropriate amount of both. You okay. Contain multitudes.
Okay. I think I would be really embarrassed if my mom saw how shitty I can be to myself. Like, that's something that I talk about with my therapist is I'm like, God, it would suck if she found out my, like, internal monologue to myself sometimes. Like, that would be so embarrassing. Because, like, she didn't put me on this earth so that I could beat myself up in, like, in my brain to the level that I do. So, like, I would like to think that she isn't there, like, watching my therapy sessions because that would be...
Being like, you pay for this?
Or she would just be like, oh, my God, what did I do to you? Like, what did I do to this child? But when I think about my mom, I like to think of her at the beach wearing some kind of, like, white linen, like flowy caftan situation.
Ooh, beautiful.
With her hair kind of like salty. And my mom had short hair, kind of like the length mine is. And it would be kind of like slicked back with salt water, you know? And she would be like having a cocktail and like smoking a cigarette and just like giving me fabulous advice. And that's kind of where I like to think my mom is. So that's where my mind goes. When I think about like my mom being somewhere else, I just like to think of her being like stuck in a screensaver or something like that.
Is it like she's waiting there, like that kind of situation?
I think she's just like hanging out.
Just chilling.
She's kind of just like at that beach. You know what I mean? She's just kind of like, she's become a sea witch. She's kind of just like at the beach and
right.
She's just enjoying herself. I think my mom had a very like stressful end of life, as do most people. They aren't lucky to die in their sleep or by like an aneurysm or something like that takes you out very quickly. That was a joke, but
very funny.
You know, whatever, we'll get there.
We're very pro aneurysm humor here.
But I think I would just like to wish that she is in a pure state of like relaxation and bliss, you know?
Yeah. And do you talk to her? Is it that kind of thing?
When I'm desperate, I should do it more because it feels it feels good when I do it. I have so much coping with my grief to do. Like, you have no idea. I, like, have so much work to do that I, like, if I start talking to my mom out loud, I will immediately cry. And to me, it's like, well, Greta, you should probably talk to your mom more out loud. So I just, I talk to her, you know, I plead with her out loud. Like, I'm praying to God. That's, like, mostly my vibe. I'll be like, please, mom, please, like, please let this happen. Please, like, I work hard. Like, please, like, whatever. It's a lot of me saying, please, 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 please. So.
But that, I mean, that does sound like, I mean, at least in some way or sometimes you think of her as like looking over you, that you're like,
yeah,
mom, please let this one thing happen.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that sometimes that I really plead with her, the thing that I want to have happen happens. And I can't help but be like, maybe she is looking out for me, you know? And I don't know. I mean, again, we don't know. Like, just as much as I can say, I don't believe in this, like, I have no proof to not believe in it. So it's like, right. I might as well just believe in it if I want, you know?
I mean, that is very deeply relatable.
Yeah. You know, I try to be very relatable, wearing an ascot, podcasting.
Yeah, folks at home, you can't see this, but...
Yeah, I'm wearing an ascot. It's my new thing.
Greta showed up with an ascot, two skylights, both bright as day, even though it is nighttime where she is.
Yes, exactly.
She lives in an impossible place.
I live in a simulation.
All right, Greta, I think that's the podcast. Thanks for doing this.
Cool.
This was another episode of A Good Cry, and I hope it helps. A Good Cry is produced by Radio Point and HeadGum, with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Richard Corson, Daniel Powell, and Houston Snyder. Recorded, edited, and mixed by Bree Mattan.
That was a HeadGum podcast.